Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. Today, I'm joined by Megan Bynum. Megan is the founder and CEO of Magnolia Soap and Bath. I've been fascinated with this concept since I first learned about it, which was through a mutual friend of ours, Eric Van Horn, and his franchise tribe mastermind. I got to listen into a couple of panels that Megan was on, as an emerging franchisor. And then sometime shortly after that, Megan's brand started working with the consulting network that I'm a part of. So I've had a chance to learn even more about Magnolia Soap and Bath, but it's a really cool concept, pretty unique, I would say, in the franchise space. So with that, Megan, thanks for being here. Excited to talk with you today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit more, what is Magnolia Soap and Bath? I mean, to some extent, the name is self-explanatory, but give us a little more color on, you know, exactly what you guys specialize in and, you know, maybe how it's different from some of the other products that are out there on the market.
Yeah, so Magnolia Soap and Bath Company, we kind of call ourselves an experiential retail experience. So whenever a consumer comes into our stores, they're greeted with bubbles. They're greeted with this very, very fragrant smell, almost kind of like a bakery. Whenever you would walk by and smell the bakery, you know, kind of blowing out of the doors. But you walk in and it's very much experiential. We really wanted to bring you into the process of the products that you're using every single day in your home. And so we have obviously soaps and bath products, but we have our cult-like following is our laundry wash that we have. We've got things for pets. We have things for babies. We have, of course, a huge men's line. So we're really just a plant-based lifestyle brand. And that was something that I was very passionate about, creating a healthier alternative to everything I was using in my day-to-day. When I started having children, I became very cognitive of everything I was putting on my skin and then my baby's skin.
Yeah.
I was horrified when I read the back label of baby lotion, thinking I'm putting, you know, this newborn baby, I'm putting all this amazing products on her because she smells so good. But come to find out, it's loaded with all these phthalates and chemicals and things that are just not great for babies.
Well, it's the same with laundry detergent and deodorant and body wash and shampoo, like all the big brands out there. When you really look into it, it's full of a bunch of crap that's really not good for you.
That's exactly it. And that's where Magnolia Soap was, you know, that was the concept that I founded it on, is that ingredient transparency is front and foremost. So even when you're walking into the stores, you're watching us make all of the products right there in front of you. And so again, that goes with the experiential side of it, but more so with the ingredients transparency. That's what I'm super passionate about, is I want to know all 10 ingredients that are in my deodorant. And I want to see that it's being poured right in front of me and that, you know, none of the other garbage is going in there. And so that's kind of where Magnolia Soap differentiates from, you know, any of the big box things that you may find on the shelves that you're used to, is that we're making it all right in front of you, completely transparent about everything that's going into it.
Yeah, which is important, because the other thing, because it's been the same kind of for my wife and I, like we've started paying a lot more attention to, you know, the ingredients in our food, the products that are used in just kind of everyday items, like you've mentioned. And we started really looking at this as we started having kids, and it's really frustrating in a lot of instances for a number of reasons. One, it's just hard to find good, clean alternatives without spending ridiculous amounts of money on it, but also like what these companies can get away with their marketing. You know, like your example of the baby lotion, like guarantee you that bottle said gentle, you know, somewhere on it, right? Like they know how to market it so that it sounds like it's perfectly fine and perfectly safe. And then when you really start looking into the ingredients, and like you have to do some research in a lot of cases to understand what these different ingredients are and which ones are safe, which ones are potentially harmful. So like there's a lot of noise out there. So I think transparency is really, really important with these types of things. I think more and more consumers are aware of these things and looking for transparency. That makes a lot of sense that that's kind of front and center for you guys. The experiential part too. I mean, we just got home yesterday from a week in Disney with our kids, and you know they've mastered the experiential. And damn, do they get you to spend some money while you're there. But like my wife and I were talking about the fact how, you know, they intentionally use certain smells, you know, to incentivize what you do, right? Whether that's go buy some food or popcorn or whatever the case is. So that makes sense too, that that's a you know, kind of center point of your model. So how long ago did you start Magnolia Soap and Bath Company?
So I started Magnolia Soap in 2018. We began franchising in 2020.
Okay. And you've grown pretty quickly since then. You were just sharing with me offline kind of where you're at today. What was it like leading up to the point of deciding to franchise? I assume like a lot of founders that start the business and their business in the way you described, you weren't thinking that this is something you could grow into a national franchise back in 2018 when you were just starting it. It sounds like you kind of just started it out of a necessity, you know, for your own personal needs. So at what point did you realize, hey, this could be a lot bigger, and when did franchising it come onto your radar?
Yes, yeah, so like you said, franchising was never really like front and center on my mind whenever I first began this. I literally wanted just a healthy alternative. I started in a New Albany, Mississippi, population less than 7,000 people, have a
Yeah.
super cheap rent. So I was like, you know what? If it doesn't work, like I'm not out that much money. Like I'll be okay. But turns out our first year there, we did just super crazy numbers that just would blow anybody away. And our margins were fabulous. And so it kind of like, okay, we're on to something. And so from there, I opened two more corporate locations in different locations. I went to Oxford, Mississippi, which is a college town
Yeah.
about 45 minutes from here. And then I hit a big city. I wanted to go to Jackson, Mississippi and test it and see how it would go there, which is, you know, very much a larger population. And it was about 3 hours away. And it crushed it in those three corporate locations. And again, at this point, I'm still thinking like, okay, well, I can just keep, you know, opening my own locations because they're doing so well. And they're, you know, after one or two stores, you kind of get the gist of it. It's super easy to replicate and duplicate. So that was kind of what my thought process. Well, as I'm opening my third location in Jackson, Mississippi, I have this man that just keeps calling me, and he's like, I've used your products for a very long time. I'd love to do this concept in Memphis. You know, please let me franchise this brand. And I was like, Bubba, I don't even have the, I don't even know what to do. Like,
Right.
I don't even know how would we even go about doing
Was
this?
this guy like a franchise guy? Like, did he know franchising, or he just loved the product and wanted to open the business in his town?
So that's what he had been corporate America his whole life, and he was
Okay.
tired of like the daily grind and had some retirement money, and he said, I love the brand, I love what you're doing, I want to do it here. So he and his wife, you know, they came down and visited us our store in New Albany, and we chatted with them for a while, and I was like, well, let me start the paperwork and just kind of see where that goes. You know, I'm thinking it's an easy process. Oh, I'm just gonna franchise my business. Well, no, that is not how any of that worked.
No, cost some money for one.
costs a lot of money
Yeah.
and a lot of time. And you still get it wrong half the time. So
Yeah.
you have to redo it again. But
Yeah.
no, we did. We started the process, and about 9 months later, we were able to execute an agreement and have his location in Memphis open up. And he was kind of like our first go at, trying this model that wasn't a corporate location. And so from there, we saw that it worked and it went great. And he was happy and he's been super successful. And from there, we've had just every one of our stores that have opened have all been brand fans. And it's
Yeah.
been a completely organic growth. I just went into the broker markets in July, and I've only probably turned about six deals through the brokers. So everything that we've done has been completely organic and brand fans and people that have tried the products and loved it and wanted to share it with their friends and family.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense to me. Like, I've been in franchising for a while. I used to, work for franchisors and do franchise sales. And like the brands I worked for were brands that you kind of needed the brokers and consultants because the type of franchisees we were looking for, it just wasn't the type of business that the right person was likely to see an ad for and be like, oh, that's the franchise for me. So we really needed to be able to get in front of these consultants, kind of educate them on, the business opportunity side of it so they could relay that to the right people that they were working with. But I've seen brands similar to yours that really lend themselves to that kind of organic growth model where it's such a good product and, people try it, they love it, and they see that it could, work in their market as well. And as a quick plug, when you guys did start working with our network, you were nice enough to send out some gift packages. So we got some samples. I haven't had a chance to visit one of your locations in person yet, but we got to sample some of the products and the laundry detergent. It smells so good. And it was the type of thing, right? So like, we have probably gonna embarrass myself by saying this. We have just like, one of the big brand laundry detergents on subscription from Amazon, right? So it shows up once a month, and I think it's supposed to be one of the cleaner ones, but I don't know. So we get yours, comes in this little tub, and we use it, and we're like, wow, that's so good. And so we use like half of it, and then we put it back on the shelf. We're like, we're gonna save this for later. And so we ran out, and for whatever reason, the subscription was running late. And just a couple of weeks ago, because our big container of it had run out, I dumped some of yours in the laundry, and my shirts came out smelling so good. And I told my wife, I was like, I bet we can set this up on subscription
Oh,
on
100%.
Magnolia's
I was
website.
just about to say
And
that.
yeah, so forget whatever we're getting from Amazon. Like, this smells so good. I want to wash our clothes in this all the time. But and then you have like a dry shampoo that my wife tried, and so she's got like naturally curly hair, and sometimes she straightens it, and she's used these other dry shampoo products, and she's like, usually within a couple of hours it's kind of frizzing again. And she said with yours, several days without any. She's like, it's the best dry shampoo I've used. And she went and looked on the website, and I don't remember what it costs, but she was like, it's way cheaper than the, $200 shampoo I've been using. And I did a dull. I was like, I had no idea there was $200 shampoo out there.
Right.
That was news to me. But anyways, and our kids, I think you sent some of the bath bombs or shower bombs, and our kids thought those were super cool. So we're fans of the products that we've tried, and it's definitely, good quality. And I think you list all of the ingredients right there on the website. So that transparency is there for sure. If you're listening to this podcast, then there's a good chance that you're looking to create more freedom in your own life. There's also a good chance that you realize that owning your own business can be a great way to take more control of your livelihood and create more of that freedom that we're all looking for. Also, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you realize that I specialize in franchise ownership. In addition to owning franchise businesses myself, I have a franchise consulting firm, Path to Freedom, where I help people navigate what is typically an overwhelming process of understanding franchising, identifying specific franchise companies that could be a fit, and then conducting the due diligence in a thorough and efficient manner with those franchise brands. My whole purpose here is to leverage my experience working for franchisors, owning franchises myself, and how we've been able to use that to create more freedom in our lives and help you determine if that could be a path that makes sense for you as well. So if any of this sounds interesting, if you've considered business ownership in the past, whether you've explored franchising specifically or not, I'd love to connect with you. I'd love to learn more about you and what it is that you're working towards in your life and determine if I may be in a position to help. A great starting point is the link below in the show notes, which will take you to a short form to fill out, and you'll receive a free copy of an ebook that I've put together, The 7 Steps to Freedom Through Franchise Ownership. That'll also get us connected, and I'd love to set up an introductory call where I can explain a little bit more about the process that I use to help people determine if franchise ownership could be a great way to start charting their own path to freedom. So click the link below in the show notes, receive the ebook, and let's get connected. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, that's again front and center of mine. And I know as a mother, my children, they're allergic to the dyes, they're allergic to all the smells. And so that's what really differentiates us, is that we're not using any of the dyes. So yes, our stuff is colorful, and yes, all of the products have all these vibrant, you know, colors in there, but no dyes are present. I mean, I can't use dyes. My children will literally walt from head to toe. And so that's a huge plus. And then the phthalate-free fragrances. And like, so even like you say, like, you know, your clothes smelled so well after coming out of laundry, but it's not loaded down with phthalates. And the phthalates are like the known hormone disruptors and the skin irritants and all the things that are so aggressive and smells that are bad for you, literally known carcinogens. We strip all of that out of our fragrances. So we're still able to have a very fragrant and very something that smells amazing when it's on your skin and on your laundry, but it's not loaded with the chemicals like your commercial products are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like with your laundry detergent, it has much more of a distinct good smell, right, than like with the other. Maybe it's just because we've been using the same thing for a while and I'm kind of used to it, but I don't even really notice, you know, it doesn't smell bad. It doesn't smell like it's dirty still, but I don't really notice a scent very much. But so let me ask you this, like how difficult, because this is not your background, right?
No.
Soap and laundry detergent and all of that. So like, how difficult was it to dig in and figure out, you know, all of this, right? You're talking about phthalates and known carcinogens, and like, you know, I'm vaguely familiar with some of that, but I'm far from an expert. And like I said earlier, there's so much noise out there when you start researching this stuff, like what's actually harmful to you, what's okay, what's real factual information out there on the internet. Like how long and how hard of a process was it to just sift through all of that and figure out not only like, okay, if we want to make a clean soap bar, this is the ingredients, but then how to actually source it, put it all together. Like what did that process look like?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was something that quickly became my passion. I guess once you have children, like that motherly instinct just goes into overdrive, and yeah, you just want to protect them in any way possible. So yeah, I already naturally just research everything. I mean, I'm not going to go to, you know, a vacation without researching it thoroughly. I don't buy products off Amazon without almost reading every single review. So kind of research is naturally my thing. Like I'm going to find out, you know, the good, bad, and ugly about everything before I just, you know, dove into it. But with this, it was definitely like it became my passion. And then obviously I'm protecting my babies and using it on my children. So it's just that natural instinct took over. And I was just forward with, you know, making sure that I was giving not only the safest but the best quality out there. And that's one thing that, like, we are super transparent in all of our ingredients, but we're not using just your average shea butter that you can receive, you know, that anybody can get online and order. I've used the same distributor I started with 6 years ago just because I know it, trust it, and know that it works for us. So the process was very, I mean, there was a lot of trial and error. I mean, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many times I've ruined batches and just, you know, thrown money out the door. But I mean, that's all part of it. That's my favorite part. Like whenever I get to go into my factory and sit there and do R&D, like they call me like a mad scientist because that's my happy place. I want to be there. I want to be making new ideas and new products just constantly. And that's another thing that kind of keeps us, you know, ahead of the competition is that we're constantly bringing in new products and new, if I see a new need in our lifestyle that we're using a product that I don't have a plant-based version for, I'm going to create it and I'm going to find it and test it and figure it out until it's just perfect.
So is that the key? Everything you're selling is plant-based, meaning no artificial ingredients.
Correct. Correct.
And that's the big difference between Magnolia's product line and, I mean, we don't need to mention any specific brand names, but all the big brand names that we know, whether it's laundry detergent, deodorant, shampoo, et cetera.
Correct.
And I assume it's a cost thing, right? For these big companies, they're not using all natural plant-based ingredients because they can make it for cheaper and in larger quantities with some of the artificial
Well, and
ingredients.
just an example of how soap is made. If you were to get like your big box soap off of the Walmart shelf. It's going to be made, you know, in a huge factory. And what they've done is they started with the soap oils, but they've stripped it all the way down, added all these fillers in there, and then they kind of give you what's kind of called a bar of soap. And it's honestly, they don't even really call it soap because most times there's very little soap actually in it. It's loaded with all these other fillers. When you're getting a Magnolia bar of soap, we literally take the olive oil, the coconut oil, the palm oil, and every bit of that remains intact to the entire process. And again, there's that ingredient transparency and also that experiential side of it. You can come in and watch us pump out the oil from our barrels that are already pre-made with my recipe, pump out the oil, mix it with the fragrance, the mica, and the lye, and pour it into the molds, then cut it. And then literally hand the bar of soap to the consumer. So they're seeing that nothing is stripped out of that bar of soap. Those oils remain intact and they're not ever, you know, used. If you were the big box, what they do is they take those oils that are so good and pure and moisturizing and they take them and put them in the luxury hand washes and the luxury body washes. And again, it's not present in that bar of soap anymore. So that's kind of the difference too in big box soap and Magnolia soap.
Yeah, I see. I could nerd out on that and take us down 100 different rabbit holes. I'll try not to. But so that experiential part. So your franchisees or your corporate locations, they are truly, essentially hand making. It sounds like every product that's being sold at that location, at their location.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're doing it, I guess, kind of off of, I don't know if you call it formulas or recipes that you and your team at corporate are creating, you know, when you go into mad scientist mode.
Right. Yeah. So we have a training where we bring the franchisee into our corporate location in Tupelo, Mississippi. We train them hands-on for 4 to 5 days. Then they go home. We've got a very extensive learning management system where they're able to plug in and rewatch videos, rewatch the recipes, really go in there and dive in if they've forgotten something. But it's very much, yeah, recipe based and everything is locally handmade in every store.
So how much of a learning curve? I mean, it sounds like very thorough training, but I assume you're not out there looking for franchisees that know the first thing about making soap prior to joining Magnolia. So how much of a learning curve is there? Do people struggle as they're going through training to kind of, pick it up? Or is it something that with the proper instruction and the right processes, almost anyone could do?
I'm going to tell you this. My 8-year-old is in the store almost every single day, and she can make every single product. If you can follow a recipe, you can make any of our products. And so that's something. I mean, we've trained over 100 franchisees, and it's never something where they're like, I just can't get this. Like, it doesn't work for me. It's literally, if you can bake a cake, it's easier than baking a cake.
Yeah. Still might be tough for me. Baking, following recipes, never been my strong suit, but I'm probably the exception. So one, I want to, make sure we talk about the franchise opportunity itself, but one other thing I wanted to ask you about, 'cause I've had this come up in talking about Magnolia to a potential franchisee. You mentioned staying ahead of the competition. What does the competitive landscape look like today? You don't have to mention brand names if you don't want to, but in terms of products that you would view as at least somewhat comparable to what you're offering. So not talking about the big brand name stuff that, we've already established is, full of crap and not clean and transparent with their ingredients. There has been a movement across most industries where more and more consumers are paying attention to these things and are looking for cleaner, healthier options, whether that's in their food, in what they're drinking, in things like you're selling. So I assume there's other companies out there at least trying to push out similar products. So what does that kind of look like from your point of view as we sit here today? Is there much in the way of direct competition, or is this still kind of blue ocean opportunity?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, we've got just off the top of my mind 2 to 3 huge competitors that we would say that actually, specialize in the plant-based retail experiential side of of this industry.
Okay.
Obviously, there are tons of people that are doing. I mean, obviously, the awareness, as you said, is just very front and center of mind for a lot of people these days. So a lot of companies are going toward, creating that plant-based version of whatever they've got. But I think it's wide open as far as, again, we started out with just, about 12 SKUs, and now we've grown to over, I think I have 42 different categories, just
I have
in
your
5.
website pulled up here, and at the top of the page, it says 171 products.
There, I mean, and the variations in every one of those categories is different too, because I can do all the different smells. So it's there's wide open, there's a lot of growth. I mean, like, we haven't even ventured into like the kitchen side, like of dish soap, dish, there's all there's tons
Well,
of
yeah,
things that are
cleaning
yeah, cleaning.
supplies, right? There's almost endless directions that you guys could continue to go down using that same kind of, ethos of clean, healthy alternatives, transparent, tied into the experiential, side of it. And for those of you listening, go check out the website. We'll make sure there's a link posted in the show notes. The products just like jump out and grab you. Like they're very aesthetically pleasing, bright colors. They look cool. And I never thought I would.
And dye free, so they have no dyes.
Right. So this is where I could nerd out and go down a rabbit hole and ask you 1,000 questions about how you get it to look so pretty without using any dyes. But I never thought I'd talk about a bar of soap looking cool, but you got one on here. It looks like Starry Night. It's pretty cool. I mean, is there any concern? 'Cause you mentioned like some of the big brand names out there. Let's just use laundry detergent as an example. Is there any concern with, you know, one of the big players in that space just saying, oh, okay, we see this kind of consumer movement to cleaner, healthier options, and then just kind of, you know, leveraging their size to, you know, dominate the market by rolling out their own version of that?
You know, I mean, there we've seen that. And I mean, the difference in that and us would be, again, it goes back to that experiential, and then also like the sense of different smells that we offer, where that consumer can, you know, use Vanity for this month, and then we have a refill program where they would bring it back into the store. We refill it for them for a discount, but then they can swap smells that month, the next month. So it's very much, again, bringing in and really tying in that personal experiential side to it that really differentiates us. And again, our product, I think we're using the purest form of everything, even in our facial products. You know, when you're getting a serum from a dermatologist and whoever that may be, I guarantee you the first ingredient is going to be water. And that's because that's the most active ingredient. Well, they take that really great product of, you know, that may be working, and then they dilute it with water. So it's still in there, but it's diluted. Well, when you go grab our liquid gold facial serum, it is 100% all of the oils very much present in there. A little bit goes a long way because it is the purest oils, but we're not stripping all the things out to make it work for us and our pocketbooks. You know, obviously we're there for, we're in business to make money, but we're still protecting the integrity of the recipe and the purpose behind it, and giving that consumer the best bang for their buck. The same way with the laundry soap, even laundry detergents are full of water. The main ingredient is going to be water. When you come into Magnolia soap, you're able to get just that pure powder, and there's nothing else added to it.
Yeah, it is. It's a powder. It's not liquid where they can sneak a bunch of other stuff into it. And no, that explanation, and I think it all comes back to that experiential part of it. And, you know, these big corporations, it's number one, it's hard for them to pivot quickly, right? So even if they do, you know, really start, you know, moving down the path that you're already going on, and I'm sure some of them have, but it's going to take them longer. And it's also going to be very tough for them to have as many options, right? Because they've got to manufacture in such vast quantities. And like I think you called it the Regal program, where they can come and you'll refill it at a discount, but they can do a difference. Like that makes a ton of sense to me. Like I don't like buying I use the same brand of body wash and shampoo, but I like to mix it up, you know? Which kind of gets boring. I don't think anyone else could even tell that I'm using a different body wash, you know, today than I did yesterday. But, you know, for me, I like to mix it up sometimes. So yeah, the experiential piece makes a ton of sense, in terms of how you can differentiate yourselves. I think it's important for people to remember too. I have these types of conversations a lot with franchise buyers, because, you know, they're always analyzing the competitive landscape in any business that they're investigating. Like, you don't need your business to be, or your product to be attractive to every single person out there, right? You need, and this is where in a franchise, you know, the franchisor can really, really help new franchisees especially. You need to know who your target client is, what's going to speak to them, what's going to resonate to them. And you need to know how to get in front of them and how to communicate your message to them, right? And if you know that, you don't need everyone to be a customer. So, you know, the way you've got, and I'm not even talking from a pricing standpoint, but the way you've got Magnolia Soap and Bath Company branded, and, you know, the look and feel of the locations, it's kind of boutique-y, I would say, right? Like, you've got it positioned as a higher end brand. I look at the prices and, you know, it doesn't seem all that expensive to me. I'm sure there's cheaper options out there, but, you know, you get what you pay for. But my point is simply, especially with a business like this, you don't need to get every single person in America to change, what they're currently using for these products and shift to you. You just need enough of the right people that see the value. And I know just from, hearing some of your story that you have very loyal customers. And the fact that your first franchisee, was a customer, and that so many of your franchisees or customers are a testament to that, that, once people try it, they fall in love with it and they're going to keep coming back. Also wanted to reiterate something that you mentioned very early in the conversation, which is you started this business in a town in Mississippi with, would you say, less than 7,000 people? Guys, that's like unheard of when we talk about brick and mortar. Like, if I were to do a territory check with, probably with the exception of Magnolia Soap and Bath, any other brick and mortar franchise, but probably almost any franchise that I work with for a town with a population of 7,000 people, they'd come back and tell me that the territory is not viable and they would have to expand out pretty dramatically, to get a large enough population to make up a viable territory. So I think that's a big testament as well. And a lot of
One of our top producing stores for this year is in a population of 5,400 people
no
in
way.
Alabama. And that's kind of something that we, when
They
we've
don't
gone
take baths in Alabama, do they?
home, apparently they take a lot of Magnolia soap baths because I have
You
been blown away by this franchisee. I mean, I will get on the phone with him and I'm like, what are you doing to get these people? Because he can flock consumers into that store. And like I said, where are they coming from? Because it's population
Maybe they
5,400.
just had never taken a bath before he opened up. They're like, all right, maybe we'll try this. And they're like, wow, this is actually, my wife went to LSU, so we're LSU fans and have a bone to pick with Alabama. But
They'll hate each other for
so
sure.
no, but that's such a cool story. So let's talk about that, kind of from the franchise owner perspective. Obviously this is a storefront model. You guys do have an e-commerce platform, right? So, and as I understand it, website sales are a pretty big part of the overall business. Can you kind of break down what that looks like for a franchisee? Like, what happens if someone in their, area maybe comes to them first, tries it, and then likes it, but opts for the more convenient, method of purchasing through the website?
Yeah, so not only do we have our retail brick and mortar for the franchisee, but the franchisee is also given a micro site. And so that franchisee is able to, so if a consumer comes in and purchases, or even friends and family, if he wants to post it on his social media, hey, go shop my website, they're able to, they've got three options on their micro site. So they can do a store pickup from the micro site, they can do DoorDash delivery, or they can order straight from e-com and they receive a 30% profit from the sale of that one. And that consumer is linked to that store for the rest of the year. So if they go shop at Christmas time or birthdays, whatever it may be, they are still able to receive the commissions from that sale on the microsite.
30% is pretty hefty. I mean, I've seen other franchises with an e-commerce component, and I don't think I've ever seen the franchisees get anywhere near 30%. I would venture to guess that, that's pretty close to what they would target as a net margin with a customer walking in their door and buying something. But they're not even having to touch anything in the e-commerce scenario. So,
I mean, I wanted to make it as friend. I mean, we're super franchisee based, and I
yeah.
wanted to make it as lucrative and even more, lucrative for them as a e-commerce site where they don't even have to touch it. Like you said, like let us handle all the work of packaging it and getting it to the consumer, but you still hit your net margins and you still get
Yeah.
that proceeds that go toward your numbers.
Yeah, that's really cool. So on the brick and mortar side, we're not talking massive storefront here, relatively modest in terms of size. What's kind of your typical target from a square footage standpoint?
We go, our target is around 17 to 1900 square foot. I mean, we can go a little bit larger. We've seen, up to 23, that's worked just fine. But yeah, we've got that smaller footprint. We can put everything into that 17 to 1900 square foot and rock and roll.
Yeah. Which is attractive for a lot of reasons, right? Those types of spaces, it tends to be more of them available. Obviously, the rent tends to be, a little more reasonable. So a little less overhead. And you were sharing with me offline, you guys are kind of averaging really about 6 months from signing to opening, which obviously, that can't be guaranteed. There's always variables that could, impact that one way or the other for an individual franchisee. But, I told you, compared to most of the other brick and mortar concepts I work with, that's really good. I'm hearing more like 9 to 12 months with, 9 months being pretty optimistic. Like a lot of things gotta go right. But a lot of those brands are bigger footprints. Also, more extensive build outs. From what I've seen of your locations, they look great on the inside, but it's not a ton of heavy lifting when it comes to like the build out of what needs to go in it. You don't have a bunch of equipment, I guess. What is the equipment to actually make the products look like? How extensive is that setup?
It's super, I mean, it's way easier than you think. And that's one of the concepts that I wanted to make sure that no matter how fast I grew, how many stores I had, I wanted to keep that footprint around the same because our competition's opening stores at 3 times what we open a store at. And ours are very much that boutique. We call it the Southern Charm. We've got the deep wood, all of the pieces are built right here, literally in the facility I'm sitting in right now. Every piece of furniture in the store is built right here in Mississippi. But it really gives you that kind of bougie farmer's market feel in the store. And it's got that Southern charm wrapped into it, but it's not overly built out. We don't have all these huge, stuffy commercialized build outs. And that was just something that from the beginning I've been very cognitive of making sure that our build outs are kept to a very affordable and just not overly done. We don't have to do plumbing. We don't have to run all these different, you don't have to have like in a restaurant, you have to have the entire back. I mean, we don't have to have all that. We can take a vanilla box, and that's how we're also able to open so quickly is that, we can take a vanilla box and paint it, put the flooring down, and then put our fixtures out, and you're ready to rock and roll. So it's a very, very easy, low cost opening. And also, we've got a very good real estate program that we have, our partner that we work with, Morrow Hill. They've been getting, 6 to 8 months waived on our rents for our franchisees. So all that's doing is putting money faster into the pockets of the franchisee where they're getting a return on their investment way sooner than expected.
Yeah, that's huge. And that's the power of, joining a fast growing franchise, right? Because as you guys continue to scale, you're able to leverage that, especially with the right real estate partners to go out and use the size of the organization to get better deals for your franchisees, compared to if someone just wanted to go and like I guarantee you didn't get 6 to 8 months of rent waived when you opened your very first location, right? Because
I
there
never knew
wasn't
of
any
much.
scale yet. Right. Yeah, so that's really exciting to hear. So when you mentioned something earlier, I just wanted to clarify one of your larger competitors, they're opening, I think you said they're opening it 3 times the amount. So you're talking about the dollars to open. It costs roughly 3 times. And I will say, guys, I mean, I try not to dive into numbers, specific numbers, but you know, every franchisor list an initial investment range in their franchise disclosure document. And that range is really kind of meant to encompass everything from initial franchise fees to, you know, startup and build out costs, as well as some operating capital, you know, as you start operating the business. And for brick and mortar concepts, Magnolia is either the lowest or, you know, one of the two to three lowest out of all the brick and mortar concepts I work with. And I remind people all the time that, you know, just because a franchise requires less capital to launch does not mean that, you know, the earning potential or the growth potential of the business is less than the franchise that requires significantly more capital. You know, those things do not necessarily go hand in hand. So that's a, to me, an intriguing part of this as well. You know, you as the franchisor can't guarantee any financial results for anyone. You know, I talk all the time on this podcast and with my candidates that, you know, franchising is like riding a bike. You know, it's your job as the franchisor to build the best bike that you can. But it doesn't matter how good the bike is if the franchisee doesn't get on and pedal and pedal hard, you know. But the opportunity for, you know, some pretty significant ROI, pretty quick ramp up, you know, all of that seems to be here. And, you know, you've got a really good sample size of franchisees at this point. I think when we were talking offline, you said you're 45 locations open.
Yeah. We'll have our 45th location opening this weekend.
Yeah. And another 16 or 18 in development just means they're somewhere in that process of getting open. So that's good for someone, you know, wanting to learn more about the brand, because, you know, they can, number one, you can publish data in your disclosure document, based on what the existing franchisees have done in their business. And they'll have a chance to talk, you know, with some of those franchisees and hear directly from them. So, always good when there's a large enough sample size to really, you know, be able to dig into to some of that during the due diligence. So let's talk a little bit about the franchise owner that you're looking for and what their role in the business would look like. And then, we can kind of wrap this one up, but I want to make sure, you know, this kind of comes across clearly, because I imagine some people out there listening, they're like, yeah, this business makes a ton of sense. I could see it doing well in my area. I recognize the need for it, but, you know, I don't know anything about making soap. I think we already kind of covered that piece that, you know, that's not a prerequisite. But I can also imagine some people thinking, you know, I don't want to stand in a retail location all day behind a register, you know, greeting customers. Like that's not what I see myself enjoying. So what is kind of the ideal role for the franchise owner themselves in this model?
So that's another beauty of Magnolia, is not only can we kind of squeeze into any kind of territory, we can go into the super small areas or the larger cities, but the beauty in this is if you decide you want to work every single day, like have at it, but also if you want to put a manager in place, that's absolutely perfect. And what around, I'd say probably 40% of our franchisees currently are doing is where they've got a general manager in place that's been through the training with Magnolia Corporate, and they're able to just pop in and run their stores, you know, as they want to. I do that personally for myself. I have 10 corporate locations. I don't step foot in my locations. I've got managers that run every one of my locations for me. And I do, you know, the weekly check-ins with my management team, but I'm able to kind of be, you know, I don't have to be there every single day. We do have a lot that really enjoy just that, because we're very community-centric. We're very, again, that experiential side of it. So they enjoy being in there every single day.
Yeah.
You've got those franchisees as well. And they, it's really your personal preference on how you would like to operate your location. A lot of the newer ones that we've got coming in are more of that kind of semi absentee owner.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, like how many people need to be working in a location at a given time, whether that's the franchise owner plus some employees or a manager plus, like what's the ideal number of employees? I'm sure there's peak times and slower times, but what does that kind of look like?
So another thing that's really great about this business model is that the labor model is super low. You can have 1 to 2 people in the location at all times during, normal hours. Around Christmas, obviously, you want to ramp that up to about 3 to 4, maybe 5, just depending on the volume of your store. But it's a very, as long as you've got a very efficient manager in place or a franchise owner in place, it's a 1 to 2 people a day kind of labor model.
Yeah. So remember, if you're listening to this, lower labor cost equals opportunity for higher net margins. So that's another very attractive piece of this for me. I imagine if the owner, opts to hire a manager, whether that's right out of the gate or after they've kind of worked in the location day in, day out themselves for a while, then their big role is, obviously oversight, right? Like you said, you've got, these 10 locations, you have regular check-ins with your managers, looking at KPIs. That's going to be the case in any business. But, this to me feels like a very community-centric business, right? And so, I see a really good use of the franchise owner's time being, just kind of being the face of the business in the community. I mean, this to me seems like the perfect type of business to, get involved with the local chamber of commerce, get involved with, I mean, all types of examples come to mind. I mean, I imagine home shows, vendor fairs, craft fairs, like just having a presence at these types of things and, letting people know what you are, what you do, who you're there to serve and, how you're different from the other options out there. So is that is like from your perspective, is that what you would prefer to see your owners really spending a lot of their time on? Especially once they're a little ways into the business and kind of established.
Yeah, so some of the most successful locations that we've got that are performing the best are those owners that are super active in their community and what we call our
Yeah.
community ambassador.
Yeah.
We've got a program called Hope and Soap where we designate every month this one soap, and it's designated to a certain charity, and it's the local charity that you choose at your local level. It's obviously like every month it's a different category that we choose from corporate, but you're able to go find and touch that one local charity and contribute the proceeds of the sales of that soap to that charity. And so over the course of a year, we touch 12 local charities in every single community,
So
and
cool.
give back to the community. So it's not just about soap. We always say we're more than just soap. We really
Yeah.
are. I mean, anytime you go in there, you're getting just you're loved on, and that Southern hospitality, no matter if you're in Rhode Island, you're getting that Southern hospitality that we just ingrain into our culture, in Magnolia.
I love it. I love it. Well, you've built an amazing business, and I know you're really just getting started. Like you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of different product lines that you guys could go into. As someone that's been paying more attention to ingredients and what's going into what we're eating and using on our bodies and stuff. This is something that is definitely needed. So I'm excited to watch you continue to grow this thing and really appreciate you taking some time to come on the podcast and share. We'll put links to the websites, social media. I know you guys do a good job on social as well. I think people could get a really good feel for the types of products and how they look and even what some of the locations look like. So we'll put some good resources in the show notes to make it easy for people to learn more about it. But Megan, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Wes. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
That's a wrap. Thanks for joining me today, and be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you'll know when a new episode is released. You can also check me out on my website at www.path2frdm.com. And if you want more information about franchising or just want to say hello, feel free to contact me at wes@path2frdm.com. Thanks again. Now go drop in.